I'm here, she said, for as long as you need me.
It's midnight, he said dully, sinking down by the tussort and lowering his aching head to the water. Beside him, there was a noise like a bath emptying as Binky also took a drink.
Does that mean we're too late?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I wish there was something I could do.
There isn't.
At least you kept your promise to Albert.
Yes, said Mort bitterly. At least I did that. Nearly all the way from one side of the disc to the other. There should be a word for the microscopic spark of hope that you dare not entertain in case the mere act of acknowledging it will cause it to vanish. Like trying to look at a photon. You can only sidle up to it, looking past it, walking past it, waiting for it to get big enough to face the world. He raised his dripping head and looked towards the sunset horizon, trying to remember the big model of the disc in Death's study without actually letting the universe know what he was entertaining. At times like this, it can seem that eventuality is so finely balanced that merely thinking too loud can spoil everything. He orientated himself by the thin streamers of hub light dancing against the stars and made an inspired guess that Stolat was over there. Midnight, he said aloud.
Gone midnight now, said Isabel.
Mort stood up, trying not to let the delight radiate out from him like a beacon, and grabbed Binky's harness. Come on, he said. We haven't got much time.
What are you talking about?
Mort reached down to swing her up behind him. It was a nice idea, but merely meant that he nearly pulled himself out of the saddle. She pushed him back gently and climbed up by herself. Binky skittered sideways, sensing Mort's feverish excitement, and snorted and pawed at the sand.
I said, what are you talking about?
Mort turned the horse to face the distant glow of the sunset.
The speed of night, he said.
Cutwell poked his head over the palace battlements and groaned. The interface was only a street away, clearly visible in the octarine, and he didn't have to imagine the sizzling. He could hear it. A nasty, saw-toothed buzz as random particles of possibility hit the interface and gave up their energy as noise. As it ground its way up the street, the pearly wall swallowed the bunting, the torches and the waiting crowds, leaving only dark streets. Somewhere out there, Cutwell thought, I'm fast asleep in my bed, and none of this has happened. Lucky me. He ducked down, skidded down the ladder to the cobbles, and legged it back to the main hall, with the skirts of his robe flapping around his ankles. He slipped in through the small postern in the great door and ordered the guards to lock it, then grabbed his skirts again and pounded along a side passage so that the guests wouldn't notice him. The hall was lit with thousands of candles and crowded with Stowplane dignitaries, nearly all of them slightly unsure why they were there. And of course, there was the elephant. It was the elephant that had convinced Cutwell that he'd gone off the rails of sanity, but it seemed like a good idea a few hours ago when his exasperation at the High Priest's poor eyesight had run into the recollection that a lumber mill on the edge of town possessed said beast for the purposes of heavy haulage. It was elderly, arthritic, and had an uncertain temper, but it had one important advantage as a sacrificial victim. The High Priest should be able to see it. Half a dozen guards were gingerly trying to restrain the creature, in whose slow brain the realization had dawned that it should be in its familiar stable, with plenty of hay and water and time to dream of the hot days on the great khaki plains of Klatch. It was getting restless. It will shortly become apparent that another reason for its growing friskiness is the fact that in the pre-ceremony confusion, its trunk found the ceremonial chalice containing a gallon of strong wine and drained the lot. Strange, hot ideas are beginning to bubble in front of its crusted eyes, of uprooted baobabs, mating fights with other bulls, glorious stampedes through the native villages, and other half-remembered pleasures. Soon, it will start to see pink people. Fortunately, this was unknown to Cutwell, who caught the eye of the High Priest's assistant, a forward-looking young man who had the foresight to provide himself with a long rubber apron and waders, and signalled that the ceremony should begin. He darted back into the priest's robing room and struggled into the special ceremonial robe the palace seamstress had made up for him, digging deep into her workbasket for scraps of lace, sequins, and gold thread to produce a garment of such dazzling tastelessness that even the Arch-Chancellor of Unseen University wouldn't have been ashamed to wear it. Cutwell allowed himself 5 seconds to admire himself in the mirror before ramming the pointy hat on his head and running back to the door, stopping just in time to emerge at a sedate